Welcome to the Draw.Biz Podcast, your weekly dose of fantasy footy content.
Hello and welcome to the Draft Doctors, talking all things AFL Fantasy and Supercoach Draft. 2019 fantasy season is officially over. Congratulations to all the grand final winners out there, and commiserations to my fellow losers. But 2019 is done and dusted, and the off-season fun begins right now. We're going to go round table style this episode and discuss some of the big topics from 2019, and then look ahead to 2020 and some thoughts heading into the next draft season. Joining in the off-season fun, though, it's Stevie Fizz. Welcome.
G'day, Dice. G'day, boys, and all the listeners out there. It's hasn't been a good week for the old Fizz brand. Really, really bad week. 32 weeks into my marathon training, decided to run a marathon this year. My foot's fucked. Needs about 6 weeks of rest. The marathon's in about 7 weeks. So, not good times there. And then, you know, just wake up this morning, my favorite NFL player fucking retires at 29 with like $60 million on his contract. We blow out from like the third favorite to win the Super Bowl to like 50-1. And then, you know, just you need a little win. You need a little win here and there. I've lost the Keeper League grand final to that douchebag Statesman. And, you know, so it's been a bad week. And all I'm hoping for is just a nice little wristy from Mrs. Fizz. And that'll get me through, I think.
Man, that's a shocker of a week, though, Stevie Fizz. What are you going to do regarding the marathon? Are you going to try? What's the go?
Going to go to the physio, try to get some work done on it, and because I haven't run 40Ks before. I ran 25, and just that's where all the problems started. So I don't know.
Sorry to hear, man. Jono Crockett, another big year in the books, but another huge off season to look forward to.
All I can say is my season ended about 4 weeks ago when I made zero finals, so last month's been fantastic, just kicking back, getting ready for next year and enjoying this off-season fun.
It is when the fun begins, and Cam McLaughlin rounds out our round table. G'day, Cam.
Yeah, g'day, mate. Just tired of this season, and I see Stevie Fizz has moved straight into NFL attire, and I've done very much the same thing with EPL to say goodbye to the crap season that was for my AFL fantasy prospects.
And unfortunately, before we do get into our discussion, we have received a message from the Statesman. He's unable to join us, but he was pretty keen to get this run on the show.
Oh, we're from Stato's team. Without Josh Kelly, we're a winning team. Like Ricky Bobby, we will do a shake and bake. Oh, with potato bake. They think we're behind, but never mind. On Dawson Camp, shit takes. Oh, we're from Stato's team. We'll never weaken till the premiership is won. Like the Stato, we're young. We're winning is fun. Oh, we're from Stato. 2 out of 3, all we're from Stato's team.
He's a massive flog. Now, Stevie, he did take you out in the final, but it seems like all the hate was really directed toward me and Cam. You must be feeling pretty good about yourself.
Yeah, I slipped through the cracks there pretty nicely. I'm not sure how I wasn't the main target of the song. I did run extremely hot just to make the final, so maybe Stato took a little bit of pity on me there.
All right, well,
hashtag,
we're going to get
hashtag wristy watch.
Well, we're going to get into just some thoughts on the 2019 season, just going round table style. So this will be sort of just an open discussion. And the first one, Stevie Fizz, I might get you to kick us off with, and it's just our reflections for the season.
Yeah, it was a strange season. Obviously, there was so much change with the zoning, I guess you'd say, the 666 at the start of the year. And we sort of gave our takes. I'd say it didn't really pan out. I sort of thought key forwards would get a bump. That really didn't happen at all, as we'll talk about a little bit later. I mean, it was a pretty amazing season seeing Brisbane rise up. I thought that was a fantastic story. And just the utter collapse of Melbourne was one of the strangest things I think we could all agree we've seen for a while.
Yeah, it's funny listening back to some of the earlier shows to get some You Suck content that's coming up soon. So keep an eye out for that. But it's funny how we were all just like you know, you go past it and you're like, oh, Melbourne's going to be a good team. We expect them to get lots of the ball. They're going to be scoring lots of fantasy points. It was basically just a consensus around the group, and to see that was pretty shocking. But we did think Brisbane were going to rise a bit and Sydney were going to fall, which did happen, but no one expected Brisbane to rise to these heights, I don't think.
No, certainly not. Make finals would have been a good effort. I had them just outside, so total whiff there. I think it's a great time to look back and go, well, what were the things I missed on, and was my process good or bad? Obviously we'll talk about on the You Suck show, we had some picks that missed, and I'll talk about some of the guys that I certainly whiffed on, and why some of them were good process. I still think, even if it failed, that there was certainly some bad process in there as well.
Who wants to go next on their reflections for the year? Jono, do you want to take us through yours?
Yeah, look, as Steve said, it was a great season, but just I was reflecting back on my draft day with our home league, and I was just going through the teams as commissioner of the league and just looking at my team that at the start of the year we tell you to, you know, use your tiers as that's the best way to get the value out of it, but there was one pick that really stuck in my craw this whole year basically, is my tier was telling me to get Jeremy McGovern at this stage because it was the best pick, but Tim Taranto was there, and yet I let Tim Taranto go thinking I didn't expect him to go this batshit crazy this year, but I let him go, went for my tier and missed out on Tim Taranto, which could have really set me up on my season a little bit better when I think Steve picked him up two or three picks later. So go with your gut. My gut was saying take Taranto, but the paper was saying stick with your tiers.
I'll just jump in on Taranto. Like I had him breaking out, probably not to this level, and like mm-hmm. I mentioned, I got him in our league, but I can't help but feel that he got a little bit, you know, things kind of broke his way for a breakout. Yeah. Like when Ward got injured, Kelly missed a lot, Canelio missed a lot. Like things really went his way towards having a big break. I think he'll be overdrafted next year unless, you know, mm-hmm. Canelio leaves and Ward doesn't come back, sort of thing.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty interesting. I guess that that brings me to my sort of reflection, so I'll sort of go through mine now as well. I think based on what you've just said there, Steve, based on sort of opportunities and things like that, that's been my biggest reflection, sort of learning in my first year at the Doctors, sort of learning that you got to do the combination of looking at the stats and really watching and absorbing more footy to understand the full process of what's going on. And it's definitely been something that I've noticed, particularly doing, say, the CBAs. And you just notice like 1 week a guy's going to be in the guts and he's killing it. And you're like, wow, like if you're just looking at the stats, you're like, man, I've got to get on this guy, I've got to pick him up, whatever. But then if you see the CBAs, it's like, oh, okay, this guy's got a spike. He's playing in the midfield. He's getting the ball. He's able to get that opportunity. And then if it dips off, like we've seen with Blitzarves lately, just as soon as he goes into the midfield, he gets a stack of the peel. He gets those hit outs that we need. He drops off, and it's that looking in to see who's there and what sort of competition you've got for spots as well. And I think that's something that next year, heading into draft season as well, reflecting on it, I think next year I'm going to be really looking at those competition for spots, which is something you sort of harp on a bit in the preseason. Not just the fact that somebody's heading into their third year and they're ready for a breakout, more that if they're in that third year and they're going for that breakout, or when we think they're going to break out, is that spot available for them to be there and to get that fantasy-friendly role? I think this year I've been really looking more at that sort of thing, and it's definitely helped, I think, in my draft sort of this year.
Yeah, it's probably something that, you know, goes overlooked. Like when you're talking about scores, you might not be talking about why it's happened or so forth. And that's why, you know, looms is just such the easiest pick in the world. For next year with, you know, Frio's maybe not super deep midfield, potentially a couple guys going out. But one, you know, on the flip side, like it sort of really all fell into place for a guy like James Warple. Like I'm not taking anything away from the guy, but he fell into a role that was the leading possession winner from last year. Like it's huge, the internal competition as well as the external.
Yeah, and just noticing and figuring out who those guys are. It's always going to be sort of a little bit of a guessing game in the preseason. That thought process was there, you know, with Tom Mitchell out, we were figuring out who's going to get the midfield time. You know, Diego Amir was pretty high on you guys' radar, maybe a Liam Shields as well. But who would have thought James Warple was going to just be the dominant mid available as a forward as well?
And Hendo.
Yeah, Hendo going ham early. Hey, Cam, what was your reflections?
My main thing was just about predictability more than anything else. Like, going into the season this year, with the new rule set and with, you know, which we'll discuss a little bit later, there was a lot of speculation about who's going to be, you know, in what tier. Like, it was really hard from my perspective to actually come to a list of tiers and even an order of my top 50 at the start of the year. And then maybe coming towards the end of the year and reflecting on it, it's like, well, you know, the rules maybe had a different impact to what I would have thought they were going to have, but actually the players still scored where I thought they were probably going to score. A couple of outliers being, Hendo, Angus Brayshaw, probably Tom Stewart, I thought wasn't going to go as well as he did. But realist, and Toby McLean, I don't think anyone saw was going to fall off a cliff that badly. But realistically, I think the slant of the scorers is probably about expected. I think it's probably, you know, it was maybe one of the more predictable seasons of fantasy footy after all that change.
And does anyone else have any final reflections? I think my other thing that I definitely would do next year particularly is just not have so many leagues going, because as my first season in the draft, Doctor's just got too many leagues and it really does affect the way you sort of feel about drafts. You got just so much on your plate. So I definitely recommend, if you are struggling with that, just cut down on the leagues. I'll definitely be doing that next season. I think we'll get on to maybe talking about the kick-in rule and how that actually affected this season. It was obviously a huge talking point in the preseason. Well, initially, we actually didn't know what was going to happen. Even during the early part of ranking season, we actually didn't know what the rule was going to entail. So it's been an interesting process, and I'd like to hear you guys' thoughts on the kick-in rule.
With the kick-in rule, we all thought, you know, the defenders were going to get massive bumps here, there, and the other, but it seems they've tallied off a little bit, because now that we've had the season under our belt, that short 15-metre kick inside the 50 is not there anymore. They can run that, what is it, 10 metres plus an extra 9 or whatever, kick it outside the 50. So those defenders aren't getting those dinky 1-2 kick mark handballs out of the defensive 50. So the scores have actually, I think, dropped off a little bit in 2019.
Actually, I expected to see maybe... I think we expected to see a higher top end and then a massive differential. But then if you actually look at the second tier of defenders, it's significantly increased that pool. So at the end of 2018, there were three players outside the top three that scored 90-plus average in AFL fantasy. This year, there was eight. So it was sort of your top three, and then you had eight players in the 90 range, which, I think that's indicative of maybe we expected it to be at the Jake Lloyd end, but actually it was more at the Tom Stewart end.
Well, I think, you know, it was, you saw so many guys have career highs, like, but it wasn't, and it wasn't a huge thing. And that's sort of within the range of outcomes, is like, we didn't know what to expect. We're going, well, it could be they get a 18-point bump. But it turned out it was just a mild bump. So like Jake Lloyd, Basher Hooley, Christian Salem, Daniel Rich, Brody Smith, Luke Ryan, Tom Stewart, all these guys had bumps and career highs. So I think there was something there. Was it enough to change the game? No. But you probably got some nice value on those D2-ish type guys that Cam was talking about.
I think perhaps the guys that didn't benefit as much was maybe those players that we thought perhaps would benefit just from being a pure kick-in specialist, like someone like a Luke Brown was tossed around as being an option. And don't think, like, I think those sort of guys where it was tossed around what role would be used as that kick-in. And it does seem like it was sort of that player that is a great disposal, but also with a bit of speed that they can actually get out there. But the great kickers were the ones that were utilized. So, I mean, was there, what sort of a bump are we talking, like, those career highs, Steve, if you've got just the numbers offhand or if someone does, I mean, what sort of bumps were these guys getting? Was it, you said it's not significant, but what sort of numbers are we talking?
It was sort of 5-6 points across the board. Some were more, some were less. You know, like Hooley was like 10 points more than he's been before, so.
Yeah.
But, you know, and then on the flip side, like, Sicily dropped off. I mean, he had all those bullshit role changes and yada yada, so take that with a grain of salt. It also, I thought, like, you know, teams weren't really switching the ball around the back, so there was a few plus sixes dropped off. Although looking at the numbers, a lot of players still took a lot of marks. Like Whitfield took just crazy numbers of marks. So it was sort of, there was a balance there, I guess you'd say.
And we'll talk about the death of key forwards now. Does anyone want to start this discussion? Obviously, just something that we kind of thought preseason might actually, key forwards might be something of having a resurgence with the new rules. You know, I guess we won't touch too much on the 666. We're going to talk about that separately, but we did think maybe this would benefit the key forwards a little bit. And there's the new rules, you know, a bit of the push in the back stuff being freed up a little bit to allow key forwards to go a bit more. They wanted more goals being kicked, which, you know, wasn't really the case. So, Jono, do you want to talk about the death of key forwards this year in fantasy?
Yeah, look, I was all about the key forward, as I've mentioned on earlier shows, and that also stuffed up my draft going for the key forwards, where there's other players in our leagues went for those mid-forward types who had the bigger bump, like your Dunkleys, your Kellys, your Bokes, who all went over 100, where I was thinking these key forwards were going to be exactly the same. I mean, yes, we've seen it in the back half of the year that they've stepped up, but it's only maybe half a dozen. It was your Darling, your Tom Lynch's, your Jeremy Cameron's, but going to 2020, I'm looking at your key forward as more as a stream option than actually owning them. Like, as I just said, there's only maybe a half a dozen that are actually going to be draftable next year.
Yeah, and I've basically taken a, you know, for pretty a lot of the things that we'll talk about today, I've taken a look back at 2018 and just used that as a comparison, right? And primarily with AFL fantasy, so, you know, throw your 2 cents in on Supercoach. But as far as key forwards go, in 2018, we had 4 in the top 20 at the end of the year. And for 2019, we've just got the 1. And actually, you need to go through to the top 50 before you even get to 3 key forwards, right? So there has been a significant drop off, I think. And from a goals perspective, there's a differential of about 400 goals between the years. So it's not only that, you know, the key forwards were maybe just not getting as much of the ball, but they weren't scoring as many goals as well.
Yeah, and Jono, just on Jono with our home league, that's Supercoach, just for the listeners. So key forwards obviously have a bit more relevance, but here's some averages from some of the key forwards. Now, I don't have Justin Westhoff's 2018 because he played as a ruck. But in 2018, you had Jesse Hogan, average 89, Buddy, 92, Tomahawk, 87, Gunston, 87, Jared Waite, 85, J-Roo, 85, good personality, Tom, 80, Jeremy Cameron, 80, Charlie Kernow, 76, and Jack Darling, 76. Here's the guys who averaged 76 and above this year. Matt Tabiner, Jeremy Cameron, Jack Gunston. That's it. That is it.
Wow.
And that's before this round. So if anyone, you know, kicked a massive bag or had a huge score, they might have bumped up. But you can't roster guys. Like, I mean, depending on your league, I don't know how you roster guys who are scoring averaging under 75. But it's crazy. Like Jesse Hogan went from 89, like being a really good keeper. Is he even a keeper this year? You keep him? I think it's really bizarre. And you know, the guys you mentioned, Jono, is having good second halves. They're all on good teams. So
yeah, exactly.
If you're a key forward on a bad team, you just have really low value in my eyes.
Yep.
Do you think, is there something to be said of, and I'm not suggesting this, I'm just wondering, is there something to be said of maybe like a lack of having these really, really good key forwards at the moment that could also be contributing to it? Or do you think, like, is the talent an issue rather than the role that they're available to do? Or is it more just that this style of play is just not conducive to fantasy scoring for key forwards?
I think so many teams are just playing slow around the boundary line. It's just clogged up and slow ball movement, and it's just not happening. One thing I will say is going to be interesting is they might actually become relevant due to necessity, because if we lose a whole swag of forwards like we're expecting to do, you might actually just be forced to roster lower averaging players in the forward line.
Touch on that later. I've got a list of about the top 20 who we can go through quickly and who will gain and who will lose or hold and lose, so save that one for later.
Yeah, I'm interested to hear some of those names. We'll talk about the 666 rule. And I think, Cam, you can start us off with this one.
Yeah, so there's, some high-level stats, right? We've got, in 2019, again, AFL Fantasy, 617,430 points scored across the season total. A gap of 31,900 to 2018. Just overall, that's a massive amount. That's basically one entire team's season. Massive. Then you go down, I kind of did a little bit more of a breakdown to where that gap happened. And it's primarily 666 related. So the tackles went from 26,852 to 24,616. So that's 9,000 AFL fantasy points right there gone. The disposals, the goals, as I was mentioning before, there was a massive differential of about 400 total. There was also a lower disposal efficiency, a lower amount of disposals in total, and a worse goal kicking accuracy. Like I from a 666 perspective, every stat line seems to have gotten slightly worse. And I find it really hard to believe that, you know, I didn't mind watching the games, but I find it hard to believe it's made the game any better.
Does anyone else have thoughts about just in general in fantasy and in general of how you enjoyed watching the game this year? I mean, I think it took me a little bit of time to adjust. I got to say, I have enjoyed some of the games lately with the, you know, the higher end ladder teams in these last few weeks have been really fun to watch, I think. But I think early in the year, it actually was a bit of a culture shock looking at the 666. It did look a little bit strange to what I'm used to watching, but I do think the coaches and, you know, the players sort of figured out ways to make it more beneficial to their teams, and also just it did become a better product as the season went along, at least from looking on. I mean, it may not have at all. It may just be me thinking that, but some of the games lately are certainly fun to watch. But Steve, what did you think of the 666 rule, both in terms of fantasy and just aesthetically?
Yeah, I remember early in the year, everyone was cracking it because it was just horrendous viewing for people to watch. Yes, it's probably gotten easier to watch. I don't know if the games are better. There's certainly a lot of close games. Is that close games a good game analogy working here? I don't know. There were some good games to watch, but I think you just kind of get used to it. Like, people adapt over the season. Like, this is what it is. So there's a bit of that. I was actually talking to our league champion last night, Jono, and he was saying he's enjoyed the rebirth of the wingers. Like, true wingmen have come back into the game.
Fair point. Brandon Ellis keeps his job then.
Yeah, and they certainly have some fantasy relevance. You know, if the tackles are down, maybe the marks are up. It's something you got to look at. Like, you know, like I mentioned, Lockie Whitfield is like 8.5 marks a game. Like, holy hell.
So actually on that point, disposals, marks, handballs all down.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, like, some players are going to,
yeah,
you still that's find a way.
That congestion's not correct there anymore to get, yeah, that extra handball or whatever, so that would be why, you would imagine.
I kind of thought as well, a lot of the time previously in previous seasons, and including this season it happened as well, if you've got that extra mid, if you've got one too many midfielders that you can't quite, you know, fit them all in the guts, you do just chuck them on the wing. And I'm thinking, I don't think some of those players that were put there this season with the new rules were actually as effective. Now, I don't have any examples on hand, unfortunately, but I was thinking that those guys that you're mentioning, they are just really those wing specialists, like your guy in your draft league sort of said, that the rebirth of the winger. But I think the guys that have been really effective are those hard running, out in the open space, uncontested mark and kick guys. And some of the guys, maybe like your Angus Brayshaw, who do thrive more in your contested roles, if they're put on a wing, I feel like the sort of hard running style makes it harder for those guys to actually score when they're just put on a wing, and it's not as fantasy friendly as you might hope. Does that ring true for any of you guys?
Yeah, I think so. And you look at the guys who have excelled at it this year, and they're the good runners. Like, they're really working their ass off. And I think it's been interesting because they're sort of talking about it with the All-Australian team. There should be specialist wingmen, and people are going, well, you know, Brad Hill should be in. And sure, he's had a great year. And then people are going, well, what about Brandon Ellis? What about
Lockie Whitfield, Lockie Hunter, all those guys?
Well, even McCluggage, like, he's averaging a goal a game. Like, you know, there's so many quality ones. Like, you know, your team's probably got one, but I think, like, Doss mentioned, if these guys aren't good ball users or good runners, like probably something Melbourne really lack, they're getting found out.
But that's what the game's turned to. It's actually being about quality ball users transitioning that ball from defence into attack. And that's what I've seen over the year. And
it's kind of the two-way running as well. Like it's 100, because the game's going, you know, everyone's got that little bit of an extra tank and everyone's running a little bit faster. Do you think that's what happened with Adelaide? They kind of got found out for being just a little bit too slow. Like, you look at Matt Crouch, he's only supposed to be on the inside, right? But he can't defend because he's too slow. You look at Brad Crouch, about the same.
Yeah.
Possibility.
And I did notice that doing the CBAs, it seems like the midfield rotations are in the better teams, at least, like the lower-end teams tend to experiment. But the better teams have really tight midfield rotations as opposed to years past.
Mm.
All right. I think we'll move on from the 666. It has been an interesting year, and like you said, Cam, there's been quite a few drop-offs on the stats numbers, but overall just I guess roughly looking like a similar product that we like to see from a visual perspective anyway. All right, so we'll talk about guys heading into 2020, maybe the ruck forward status players that were available to have this year, such as your Rowan Marshall, who I believe would have been taken off many waiver-wise early in the season, and people would have been frothing over that. But Steve, do you want to explain what you're talking about when you think you've said here that the public is finally catching on to rucks with ruck forward status and perhaps their value heading into the future?
Yeah, and I think Rowan Marshall really just put the exclamation point on it to the point that you couldn't miss it. But it's something we've done in years past and been really strong on it. If someone has the ruck forward status, like people were playing them as a ruck and the move is to play them as a forward, because there's so many good rucks, you can generally play a good ruck, but your forward line, you generally have to roster deeper, you know, like three or five forwards or whatever it is in your league. And the rucks have such a good baseline. If they're playing sole ruck, like they've got such a really, really good baseline, and even a split ruck like a Segler or Blixarves or whoever, like, and I think it's because Rowan Marshall had such an exceptional year, people have finally caught up to it. And it's sort of like we were sort of looking at guys like Rory Lobb in years past when he got the solo ruck time, and they were just so super valuable, but he was never mentioned. And even when he was, people were talking about playing him in their ruck slots, but Rowan Marshall's really flipped the script. But it's going to be interesting to see how many of these players we actually get for next season.
I was looking at that today and I could only come up with two, and that's Lobb and Stanley, who have a ruck forward status. Only if he moves. I didn't put him because I wouldn't be drafting him with Lysette in that team next year.
No love for Lysette?
He'll lose forward status.
I think he might keep it.
I'd say it's one of those interesting ones. I don't know that he will keep it, but I think there's a few interesting guys. Like, does McAvoy? It's only a two-game sample. It would be nice to have McAvoy's defender.
Oh, jeez. All right, we'll talk about Sam Walsh. What an epic, epic rookie season. I'll have to look up if it is one of the greatest of all times.
Most disposals by any rookie in a rookie year. By a rookie in a rookie year.
Fantastic. So let's talk about him. Let's talk about him as a 2020 prospect and obviously just a lock in your keepers.
Certainly a lock in your keepers, but for 2020, I actually don't want a bar of him because we've seen Carlton the last probably 3 to 4 weeks. They've really locked down their midfield group, as Steve just mentioned, tracked a few of their CBAs. They just locked it in with Cripps, Curno and Murphy. Yes, I know Murphy's getting on a bit, but this is pre-trade season. They could be getting Steve Coniglio. Sam Walsh will not be getting time if Steve Coniglio is there. He might get a little bit, but Murphy will be out, Coniglio in, and he's playing on a wing, and his scores were just severely hampered when he got pushed out of that midfield. So he'll get overdrafted, but I don't want a bar of it.
That's an interesting take. I would have thought, I think is this a bit similar to the Warple thing last week, that he's just too good that he will be in the midfield, in your opinion, Steve? Or do you tend to agree with Jono? I actually think he probably will get overdrafted, because we tend to see with guys that have awesome rookie years, you expect that same rise in the second year like you do from, like, you know, a James Warple going from such a low score to such a high score. But the situations are totally different. Like, James Warple didn't have that awesome midfield role in the first year versus his second year, and he also just wasn't playing the time on ground. So when you come to Sam Walsh, he's had an amazing role in his first season and he's put up solid numbers, but you can't expect such a big bump in year two, and some people might expect that. What do you think, Steve?
I think it's hard to really get better. I mean, let's ask the question, why does he get better? You know what I mean? Like, what's the path to him getting better? Is someone leaving? No, no one's leaving. Like, he's average, what is his average? 92 and 87, like. I think he might be a value in. You might not be overdrafted in Supercoach. He didn't really put out the same sort of scores for that format as Dream Team. I think he can be fantastic. I mean, if he did the same again, you'd have to say it's a good year. You know, there's a couple of older blokes in there. Maybe he does get more mid, you know, pure mid time. But he's such a good runner. I think he's going to get a nice healthy split of inside and outside. He'll probably score well. And if Carlton are a better team, that might be good. Does Doherty in go into the midfield? I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's pretty interesting, especially, you know, say they pick up a Coniglio, and if they don't pick up Coniglio, they pick up, you know, another inside mid to help shoulder the load on Cripps, and they turn him into an outside runner, and he starts getting more ball. I mean, we've just started talking about actually outside runners have sort of re-emerged, and their scores have probably bumped up consistently across both formats. I mean, that's probably the main story that I can think of, whereby he gets a pretty good improvement for next year. He just sees more ball on the outside.
Yeah, you know, do his first full preseason, and, you know, he could smash it. I don't know. It's interesting. Could he kick more goals? Could he lay more tackles? I don't know. He looks like a hell of a player. I'm sure, he's going to be an elite player.
Yeah. I think it's tough with someone like Sam Walsh. He's so high on everybody's radar. It's tough to see that you'll get any value like drafting him with where he's probably going to go in a draft. But I will
say this: he probably won't get talked up heaps from a salary cap point of view. So there might not be heaps of public awareness around. You know, he might not get the hype train.
That's fair. Steve, I need to know, what was his final Supercoach average to the decimal point? I've got some numbers here that will confirm whether he finished number one of top 10 picks or not. What is the decimal point we've got for Sam Walsh? I think he said 87 point.
Oh, Christ, I don't know. Where's my calculator?
He's finished number one. He's finished number one in fantasy. So for top 10 picks, there's probably been some other picks that have just gone ham in year one.
86.9.
He's been done. He's number two. Guess who's maintained the title at number one for top 10
Bailey
picks?
Bailey Smith.
Close. Rhys Palmer. Rhys Palmer maintains the crown. But Sam Walsh has taken it in AFL Fantasy 92. That's the best of top 10 picks from 2004 to 2019. So, monstrous effort. Okay, let's talk about a guy who had a what the fuck type of year in 2019, Angus Brayshaw. I think in the preseason, after watching two monster JLT performances, as well as doing the just regular thing of, we think Melbourne is going to be a good team, was the process. We thought there's opportunity. He's going to play a lot of midfield. I mean, he came third in the Brownlow. There was that as well on his resume. Heading into 2019, it looked like a pretty solid pick. His stock was just on the up and up and up in the preseason. And then he dished out a pretty turd 2019. What do we think of Angus Brayshaw? What did we think of this season? And then what do we do in 2020? Obviously, it's very early to be thinking about 2020, but Jono, do you want to start this discussion about Angus Brayshaw? Because he's been a topic of discussion all season long.
Yeah, look, after having a fabulous second half of last year where he did have that tear and second the Brownlow, I actually thought he would maintain what he did, so it was about the 105 average. He did drop down to 83 Supercoach and 88 AFL Fantasy, but those were his numbers before that big hit, so he was pumping those out on the wing. I know he went back inside midfield, but I'm really keen on Gus Brayshaw in Melbourne next year. They had a lot of players go through for surgery. They were just cooked from round one, they were cooked. But next year, they've got Darren Burgess, the fitness guru, coming in to get him into shape. There's going to be no love in camps or anything like that. But they're going to be running. And that's what the game is. They're going to run. And that's what Gus is good at, inside mid. People are going to go, nah, don't want a bar of him, but I'll take him. I will take him as an M5, but I might have to take him a little bit early.
Jono, if you're getting the biggest off-season addition to Melbourne, big Alan Richardson.
When did that happen?
I thought...
It was like days ago.
Oh, okay. Well, fuck, scrub all that.
Richo in.
Yeah, and Brayshaw's one of those picks I want to talk about as being good process, because he started the year, he practice games were amazing, finished last year well, had a great first month, had the role, was doing everything right. But Melbourne are just collectively not a great ball-using team. They tried him on the outside. He was better than the other hackers they had. He stayed there, and he suffered. I'm with Jono. I'm pretty keen to draft him next year. Where that is, he's going to have a wide range of slots, I would expect, and he certainly won't have his he'll have his fair share of suitors, I'll say, in draft season. So it'll be interesting to see what it looks like when you have to pick him.
Which Brayshaw gets drafted first for you, Stevie? You're too hot on. I know you got the hot. You are just so hot on Andy Brayshaw for 2020. Who goes first?
That's a good question. I want to see what happens with Fremantle's team. There's certainly a lot of rumored departures. So I'd like to see
find a coach too as well.
Probably Angus.
What did go as expected? What didn't? And what were some surprises? We're just going to have a talk about this. And Cam, do you want to start us off with one of those? You can choose anyone you want. What did go expected? What didn't? And was there any surprises that happened this year?
I mean, the Crows for me, like, we've talked a lot about Melbourne and how much they fell off a cliff, but I fully expected Adelaide to be in the top couple of teams this year. I think I had them at number one in the preseason, and they are just putrid. And I think the new game style really didn't suit them, and that sort of hurt a lot of, you know, their fantasy output as well. But then, you know, what did go as expected? Brad Crouch. Like, so we can see, I guess, year on year, when he actually gets a consistent string of games together, he scores really well in AFL fantasy. Not so good in Supercoach, but, you know, in AFL fantasy is pretty handy. I don't know, like, surprises again. I actually thought the season as a whole was a little bit more predictable than, from a fantasy perspective, a little bit more predictable than prior seasons. So probably not much otherwise. Yeah. Jono, what have you got, mate?
One thing that really surprised me was actually Carlton and the way they went in the second half of the season. New coach, didn't look like anything much changed in terms of game style and gameplay, but I don't know, maybe it was just David Teague's influence got him up and about, and they played really good football, and it's got me pretty excited looking towards the 2020 draft for some of their players for next year, and hopefully Essendon continues their losing streaks of finals is what I'm expecting.
And the one thing that did really surprise me, I didn't think Ross Lyon at the start of this year was going to lose his job.
Either did I.
Yeah.
And what surprised me is Luke Beveridge learned how to coach and play players in position too. It just floored me. Absolutely floored me.
I thought someone was going to say that. I mean, these last couple of months, it just has been the very steady midfield group that's been happening. And Jono, I must ask, do you think it's going to happen in 2020, or do you think there's just going to be another big change in the midfield? I guess it all depends how they go in the finals.
We saw it in 2016. The Tigers finished 13th that year, then went on to win the flag. 2018, it was, or 2017, it was West Coast. 2018, it was the Bulldogs. And look what happens. Fairy tales will happen. It will be the Bulldogs' year this year. Calling it.
I was surprised by Cade Simpson falling off a cliff. And I'm man enough to say it was bad process. Brought in Nick Newman, just another halfback scrubber to go along with Dale Thomas. And I got talked into Nick Newman was going to be a midfielder, and he wasn't. I damn well knew he wasn't going to be, and I blame myself. I blame myself.
Something that surprised me. I got to say, when Connor Blakely, I think we all assumed he was going to be that guy.
No.
Well,
no,
you
no,
didn't.
No, don't put that on me. No.
Oh, yeah, I do remember something in the
I've never preached the Blakely midfield role. Never have I ever preached that.
But it's in his range of outcomes. You got to understand.
It is in his range of outcomes.
Yeah.
But everyone has always been so hot on it, but I've just never preached it.
No, that's fine. I'm talking for DOS.
Okay,
so when he came back, we saw this gaping hole that Lachie Neale left. I thought, you know, there was a bunch of names we could have put in there. Rhys Conker wasn't on my radar to fill that role, I got to say. So anyway, Connor Blakely just having a very down year after returning from injury. I think everyone was just waiting week after week for him to lift. I think he's put out some real garbage to finish the season as well. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see where he's at next year, where people draw. Yeah, he put out a 35 AFL fantasy to finish the year. Real nice under hashtag hail out. But it's really, that surprised me. And something else that surprised me was how bloody good this draft class is now. We know I do like the young players around, but I've got to tell you, this draft is just an astonishing draft, and I think they're going to be features in our draft leagues for some time, and I'm talking like stars. You've got Walsh, Lukosius looks like he's going to step up in the next year or two. We haven't even seen Isaac Rankin. We've got Connor Rosie, Bailey Smith, who's amazing, Jono, as you now agree. We've got Taron RR Thomas. Chase Jones even put out a nice score. I mean, this is just a loaded draft. Like Nick Blakey, Jai Caldwell, you just go down. Haitley, Geordie Clark, Cam, you'd be frothing over Geordie Clark. It is just a loaded class.
Do you know what Bailey Smith averaged for the year this year in AFL Fantasy?
Was it very nice?
It was very nice.
Anyway, I'm super high on this class. And you know what makes it all the better as well? Pick 35. The West Coast version, Bailey Williams. There was a Bailey Williams in this draft, so it makes it all the more better. All right, is there anything else on this discussion before we go on to our personal seasons and how we went? All right, personal seasons. How do we all go this year?
I got lucky. I had players get role changes and help me get to where I went. So I'm very lucky.
Yeah, I didn't play. I made a couple of finals. I don't think it wasn't as good as last year, and there was one stat I keep for myself, which I didn't do this year, and I think it cost me. I could have played stronger. Probably nailed my drafts pretty well at the start of the year, which helped me a little bit.
And mine was pretty garbage. I actually changed my process going into my draft for my home league, and it really cost me. I was basically fighting all year just to make finals. Unfortunate.
And people listen to us.
I think I drafted okay, but I definitely want to limit my leagues next year and do some more streaming because having so many leagues, it makes it hard to focus on the streaming stuff, which I do think is incredibly valuable and something I'll be looking
certainly
to
is.
Do next season. All right, I'm just going to really quickly go through our bets and the results on these bets. So the Gary Ablett over-under bet, it was 99.5. This was Jono versus Cam. It was 88.7 AFL fantasy average
close.
Advantage.
Very
Cam.
Close.
Jono is sending off the...
I think I'll just put the call on mute for the next minute, though, because I think that's the only one that I've actually won.
So the Smirnoff Ices will be heading your way, Cam. The next one, Jack Nunes, over-under. It was 83.5. That was between Cam and I. I had the under. Cam had the over. Jack Nunes, a very nice 69.7 fantasy average. Ooh. To finish the season, so that's advantage DOS. The next one, Luke Dalhouse over under, it was 85. That was the line that was set. Cam had the over, Statesman had the under, 77.4 advantage Statesman. And the Dom off between Archie from Over the Line Sports and Cam, Dom Sheed 95 average from 22 games, Cam, and Dom Tyson 76.7 from 3 games. Advantage,
wow.
Archie. And, I've got one more actually I'm going to have to search into, and that was the off-brand overall ranking between me and Statesman, but I think I've got that in the bag. But we'll have a look now. Looking forward, and we'll just really go through these pretty quickly because we're running pretty low on time, but we've seen the emergence of rucks scoring well. Do you guys think next year there's going to be more than Grundy and Gawn going in your first two rounds of draft?
Well, looking at Supercoach this year, four rucks average over 110, and you had Lysette and Witts and the 99, so there's a case for the four at least to go in the first round and a bit. So whether it happens, you would have to be a brave soul to at least take the one of the Marshalls or the Goldsteins, but I can see Grundy and Gawn being safe locks for round one.
I think there's a case for Marshall. I think he might in some leagues, but I think two is going to be the, when we look at ADP, it'll just be the two. Mm,
I think so.
All right, the next one, quick fire. The expected loss of the top mid and forwards, DPP from this year. Who will potentially be the top forwards and will we scoop them up earlier?
So I've just quickly got a list of about the top 20 forwards currently for Supercoach at the moment. You've got Dunkley, he'll probably lose. Danger, lose. Kelly, lose. Marshall, he'll lose. Boak, gone. Warple, gone. Caleb Daniel, gone. Isaac Heaney, he'll probably retain. Dusty Martin, very interesting one. I think he's one who could get it for 2020, especially in Supercoach. David Mundy, I know Ed Curnow got it in AFL Fantasy. Supercoach don't change positions. I don't think Ed Curnow will get it. Toby Green, you could probably flip a coin on that one as well. Jack Billings, I think, loses it. Zeeble, again, could be a coin toss. And Michael Walters, again, a bit of a coin toss, I think. So there is going to be a lot of guns gone, but there's still going to be some quality players there as well.
Yeah, I reckon Green keeps it 100%, I would have thought.
Keeps it?
Yeah, I reckon Danger might be closer than we think.
Oh, yeah,
we do pick up Ablett as well.
And what you were saying, Steve, do you think we draft, in the show doc, do we draft them a bit earlier due to the fact that there is going to be that sort of limited guys that are potentially going to be scoring us those premium scores?
Oh, well, we'll have to come out with the position when we see the position list, but no, I think they'll just slide. People ignore them. I'd expect the first three rounds just to be, 90%, but I think I expect heavy mid.
Where do we take Tom Mitchell in 2020, and what do you think his impact is going to be on the Hawks midfield? We've discussed this a little bit with the James Warple questions. There's similar implications for James Warple and where we think we're going to draft him, but where do we take Titch?
Look, there's a case he can be a first to fifth pick, but if I'm drafting 6 to 10, I'm more comfortable, and especially in a Bonzo league, I'm more comfortable in that 6 to 10 range, and then at least I know I can get something of quality coming back as well, as maybe as a bit of a saver on him, but because you never know what his impact's going to be like next year. But 6 to 10 range for me.
I think he'll be going top three in like 95% of drafts.
Yep, I
can see it happening. I can see it happening, but yeah.
Like I'm not saying that I don't think where you want to draft him is a good spot to be drafting him. I just think in 95% of leagues that are just, they're going to be hot on him. They're going to see the average. It's going to be ordered there. He's just going to be right in front of your eyes. It's going to be so hard to pass up on him.
I think a lot's going to depend on what his preseason looks like. I think he'll go sort of in the 3 to 8 range. That's probably going to be fair enough. The impact, I mean, you can't really look at taking, I think, Henderson. If he gets drafted, it's too early. It depends if Cornelio goes there. I'd say the main loser would probably be the Chad. Maybe spending a little bit more time forward. That's kind of where I am. Well, I mean, the Chad's playing super low game time at the minute, but he's just smashing the middle.
Mm. Yeah, his last couple of weeks have been really good. But Tom, like across the board, mids were a few points worse off. It's pretty easy to see that there was a drop-off of maybe 5 to 6 on average. And then you look at Tom Mitchell's last season of 129 AFL Fantasy. You know, he will see decline, and he is coming off a broken leg, right? So it'll probably go back. But I still think that given the mids this year, being the high end of about 111, he's probably still your top mid in that bunch. I think he'll go top three.
He's not going before McRae.
No. Oh, McRae, no. Yeah, he won't go before McRae. McRae isn't the number one midfielder for 2020, both formats.
I find it hard not to have him there.
I agree with you. You need to see the preseason, but I actually find it hard. I think Grundy will go one, the biggest differential in the world, and then it will be followed by Titch, in my league anyway. And I'd probably take him at two.
Yeah. Oh, it'll be interesting once we hit draft season where he goes and where someone else drafts him, because I probably don't want him.
I said that too.
And where does Dunkley go? Another guy we're going to be talking about. He's going to lose that juicy forward status that we've been lucky enough to have him for this year. He's clearly now in the Dogs. Well, you'd hope he's in Beveridge's good books now, and he's in that midfield. There's Dunkley, McRae, and the Bont look like they've locked down those midfield roles with Bailey Smith. A little bit of a smidge of Bailey Smith mixed in there. That's a beautiful mix. Where does Dunkley go in drafts next year as a pure midfielder? I want to start off with Steve, because I know you're a little bit lower on him than probably maybe most people for season 2020.
Yeah, I probably won't end up with a great deal of Josh Dunkley. It's going to be interesting because I think he'll probably go around the turn, like that 10, 12, 13 range. He could go earlier. Obviously, he had a great last 3 or 4 months of the season once he finally got that role. I can't trust the Bulldogs super much. He doesn't, you know, the Libba factor's there. Mitch Wallace missed a hell of a lot of time. I'm just a little bit cagey about Dunkley. If he was the top scorer, I wouldn't be shock, Doss. I know you love it when I talk like that, but you know, you got to admit he's got a really wide range of outcomes.
Yeah, you do love the old hedge there. Would not be shocked. Does anyone else have any takes on Josh Dunkley for 2020?
I've actually got him a little bit lower, to be honest. Like, look, his average suggests this year he is in the first two rounds, but again, what Steve said, you got the Libba factor, Wallace factor, Bevo factor even, that I've got him down as that third, fourth round where I'd be comfortable taking him. So
That's a big part. Like, you know, it's where you're comfortable assuming that risk. Like, I got Dunkley this year. I didn't want him because I looked at him and McLean. I had them ranked next to each other. And it's like one of these guys will probably be good and one of these guys will be bad. And I didn't know who it was going to be.
Mm, exactly.
Yeah, it's quite interesting listening back to those conversations. And I think the funny thing is you talk about process, Stephen. That process was pretty much there as well, because McLean in the first half of the year was amazing. And when he did his shoulder, that was when he moved into that more forward role. And then Dunkley took over the reins in the midfield. And it was kind of a direct switch of fantasy relevance, basically, at that point. And so heading into this season, it really was a toss of the coin which way we thought Bevo was going to go. So I think the process was there as well. But Dunkley's obviously emerged as the beastly midfielder going forward. Does that continue into 2020 with all the mouths to feed, as we like to say? Cam, what's your take?
I just kind of think I agree with the turn comment. I think it's about the turn or just after the turn, because there's so many. For my first pick, I want them to have been established. Like, I want to see that they've done it before and they've done it before consistently. There's enough age range of people that are between 27 and probably 30-ish that have all been there and been doing it consistently. So I'd take them for sure before a Dunkley.
Now, key forwards were crap early. We have talked about that, but they did finish strong. Will you take them late or punt on them early again? Or is it going to be just that whole stream factor that Jono was talking about?
Yeah, look, I'm going to use them as a stream option, except for your handsome Toms and or maybe a Jeremy Cameron team. Key forwards in a good team. That's all I'll be looking at.
All right. What are your expectations for the top 10 in drafts next year? We've kind of mentioned the top few, but what about a top 10? Does anyone have a full tenor that they reckon will be going?
So I'm not going to go through a list, but I'd suggest it's probably, there's maybe two key position and then the rest mids would be.
Exactly what I've got. Yeah. I've got basically Gorn and Grundy, then midfielders.
Yep. Yeah, I've got Lloyd sneaking in as the only one.
Yeah,
and for Supercoach, I don't think, you know, Lloyd maybe, Marshall maybe. You know, for Dream Team, it's like Grundy, McRae, Titch, Whitfield, even when he loses defender. Treloar, Josh Kelly, Taranto, Dunkley, Zerett, all their sort of guys at the back end, you know, and that's a preference thing. So Supercoach, Fife, you know, Cripps will be in there as well.
Yep. I've got Bond potentially as well as a top 10 for next year.
Yeah. You know, and the big thing is it all sort of changes in the trade period. I can see myself, I'll be very high on Josh Kelly next year, and he's someone I'll probably target.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be an awesome 2020 draft. I know this year was pretty interesting with the whole Tom Mitchell injury just throwing everyone into chaos, but I think 2020 almost seems just as wide open. The strategies are going to be awesome, so stick with us for the off-season. The off-season is just beginning. Now, we've got a question from long-time listener Scott Warwick. He's headed to Japan and he wants to know how
Warwick.
Many...
Warwick.
Definitely Warwick.
Come on, Stacey.
It's Warwick.
I'm thinking that. What's
Don't
that?
You remember
that,
Warwick Kappa?
That? Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Scott Warwick, he wants to know, how many unique foods is he allowed to post to social media and what can he post?
Anything and everything.
Yeah, go ham.
Anything and everything, especially Japanese food. They do some real odd shit.
I find that ironic that ham is probably the one thing he won't post. You know,
that is true.
All right, I think we've got a pretty long episode here, but iTunes, are we there for your big amount of ratings that you need, Jono, for you to get your peanut butter face, whatever we're doing, the whole thing?
All right, with 226 ratings, four more to go. The listeners have voted. They want a pie in the face style, you know, your old Abbott and Costello slapstick comedy. So either myself would... we smashing my own pie in my face, or I'll get someone to smash it into my face. Again, we'll put it up to the Twitter polls. But we do have a couple of reviews this week from Coach McDonald. He says it's outstanding weekly content through the footy season. He took a devastating L in the prelim final, but he wouldn't have got anywhere near it without our help. So thank you, he says. And Rusty Peppers, he says, the Draft Doctor's title doesn't do you any justice. You're the draft gods. I hope the AFL fantasy gods don't come down and smite us for our season next year. Thanks for your help via the pod and Twitter over the season. Couldn't have made it to the big one without you. He says he won't win because he's cooked with injuries to Toby Green and others, but that's not our fault. But that's all you got to do. Leave us a rating and review, and then check out the Twitter where you'll see me get smashed in the face with some peanut butter.
And don't forget the other few things that you've said that you're going to do. We're not going to forget about those. Don't worry about that, Johnny. Just a reminder as well that from now on, not from now on, from next week on, we'll be releasing the podcast on a Wednesday. So don't be surprised if we don't release that Monday. It's going to be coming out on a Wednesday from now on, heading into the off season. We've got so much more content coming your way. We never stop. We go year round. So Wednesdays from next week onward. Keep an eye out for the Draft Doctors. All right. Last bit here, guys, at the Draft Doctors on Twitter.
Can I just give a shout out to Ben, who won the Listener League, took it out. Amazing work. Well done, mate. You'll be in it next year. Make sure you remind us when we do that sort of thing. It's going to be another fun year. We did a categories league. I don't think it suited us very well, John.
No, especially when you thought drafting for free kicks that, you know, the more you get, you win the category. No. You lose it. So I lost that category every week.
I remember the draft night. I had to leave the draft because Baby Fizz was going nuts. So I just ended up with this absolute shithouse team. But anyway, I'm sure we'll mess up that somehow next year. Yeah, but it'll be fun.
I mean, apart from some of the shambles, I enjoyed the categories league, though. It really was kind of a cool, like, yeah, I see that as a potential thing I'd like to do with some of my mates. Like, it's a pretty cool style of doing it, something different. At the Draft Doctors on Twitter, we've got plenty of questions and comments from social media. Phil B says, thanks for all the content over the year. He finally won his draft league. I basically did the opposite to what you guys said, and it all worked out. All jokes, looking forward to the off season. Brennan says, shout out to Mason Kipp for being the Jordan Steen of 2019. See you in the hot tub. Bagels says, won my Shiva League and my Keeper League, which I fell 16 points short of the highest ever score for the league. Thanks for all the advice, legends. Good on your bagels, dominating it out there. Now, Hayden, good name, Curry, says, who will amass the most possessions across the finals? Bit of a question there he's looking for. Maybe he's a DFS guy. What do you guys think on that?
Yaks on McRae.
Give me Neil.
Interesting.
I like that. Matt Clark, thanks for an entertaining and informative year, gents. Just fell short in the grand final, but that's the way it goes. Bad luck, Matty. I know how you feel. Surly the Hansard says, fantasy is dead for me after my record-breaking team lost because Green didn't play and Blakely, Warple, Cunnington, Sam Petrevsky, Seaton and Lyons all scored well below their average. Hashtag fuck fantasy. Hashtag variation. Variance. I think he's shouting you out there, Steve. Hashtag variance getting the best of a few fantasy coaches out there. Now, Mark, just want to say how much I enjoy you bastards. Get me on the podcast for a special episode next year. Steve, what do you think? Getting Mark on board?
Look, if it means less statesman, I'm all for it.
Is he an Ararat, old mate, if he's using the words like bastard? He might even drop a few C-bombs if we get him on.
He could be.
All right, well, I believe that's all we've got to cover this show. Is there any messages out there? Congratulations, of course, to everyone who won your leagues. And Stevie and Jono, the Draft Doctors, you got any messages heading into the off-season?
No, just stick with us. It's really when you do the, you know, it's like doing the stretching before your marathon training. You should do it. Otherwise, you end up with drastic foot injuries. but it's a good time. It's the most fun we have on the pod.
It is.
All right. See you next week. And that'll be on a Wednesday. We'll catch you then.
Thanks for listening to the Draft Doctors Podcast. For more tips and in-depth analysis, head over to thedraftdoctors.com.au.